Chapter 42. Holden. Holden had spent a month at the Diamond Head Electronic Warfare Lab on Oahu as his first posting after officer candidate school. During that time, he'd learned he had no desire to be a naval intelligence wonk, really disliked poi, and really liked Polynesian women. He'd been far too busy at the time to actively chase one, but he'd thoroughly enjoyed spending his few spare moments down at the beach looking at them. He'd had a thing for curvy women with long black hair ever since. The Martian Marine was like one of those cute little beach bunnies that someone had used editing software on and blown up to 150% normal size. The proportions, the black hair, the dark eyes, everything was the same, only giant. It short-circuited his neural wiring. The lizard living at the back of his brain kept jumping back and forth between mate with it and flee from it. What was worse, she knew it. She seemed to have sized him up and decided he was only worth a tired smirk within moments of their meeting. "Do you need me to go over it again?" she said, the smirk mocking him. They were sitting together in the galley, where she'd been describing for him the Martian intelligence on the best way to engage the Monroe-class light destroyer. "No," he wanted to yell. "I heard you. I'm not a freak. I have a lovely girlfriend that I'm totally committed to, so stop treating me like some kind of bumbling teenage boy who's trying to look down your dress." But then he'd look up at her again, and his hindbrain would start bouncing back and forth between attraction and fear, and his language centers would start misfiring. Again. "No," he said, staring at the neatly organized list of bullet points she'd forwarded to his hand terminal. "I think this information is very informative." He saw the smirk widen out of the corner of his eye and focused more intently on the list. "Okay," Bobby said. "I'm going to catch some rack time. With your permission, of course, Captain." "Permission granted," Holden said. "Of course. Go. Rack." She pushed herself to her feet without touching the arms of the chair. She'd grown up in Martian gravity. She had to mass 100 kilos at 1G, easy. She was showing off. He pretended to ignore it, and she left the galley. "She's something, isn't she?" Avasarala said, coming into the galley and collapsing into the recently vacated chair. Holden looked up at her and saw a different kind of smirk. One that said the old lady saw right through him, to the warring lizards at the back of his head. But she wasn't a giant Polynesian woman, so he could vent his frustration on her. "Yeah, she's a peach," he said. "But we're still going to die." "What?" "When those destroyers catch us, which they will, we are going to die. The only reason they aren't raining torpedoes down on us already is because they know our PDC network can take out anything fired at this range." Avasarala leaned back in her chair with a heavy sigh, and the smirk shifted into a tired but genuine smile. "I don't suppose there's any chance you could find an old woman a cup of tea, could you?" Holden shook his head. "I'm sorry, no tea drinkers on the crew. Lots of coffee, though, if you'd like a cup." "I'm actually tired enough to do that. Lots of cream, lots of sugar." "How about," Holden said, pulling her a cup, "lots of sugar, lots of powder that's called whitener." "Sounds like piss. I'll take it." Holden sat down and pushed the sweetened and whitened cup of coffee across to her. She took it and grimaced through several long swallows. "Explain," she said after another drink, "everything you just said." "Those destroyers are going to kill us," Holden repeated. "The sergeant says you refuse to believe that UN ships will fire on you, but I agree with her. That's naive." "Okay, but what's a PDC network?" Holden tried not to frown. He'd expected any number of things from the woman, but ignorance hadn't been one. "Point defense cannons. If those destroyers fire torpedoes at us from this distance, the targeting computer for the PDCs won't have any trouble shooting them down. So they'll wait until they get close enough that they can overwhelm us. I give it 3 days before they start." I see, Avasarala said. And what's your plan? Holden barked out a laugh with no humor in it. Plan? My plan is to die in a ball of superheated plasma. There's literally no way that a single fast-attack corvette, which is us, can successfully fight 6 light destroyers. We aren't in the same weight class as even one of them. But against one, a lucky shot, maybe. Against 6, no chance. We die. I've read your file, Avasarala said. You faced down a UN corvette during the Eros incident. Yeah, one corvette. We were a match for her. And I got her to back down by threatening the unarmed science ship she was escorting. This isn't even remotely the same thing. So, what does the infamous James Holden do at his last stand? He was silent for a while. He rats, Holden said. We know what's going on. We have all the pieces now. Mao Quick, the protomolecule monsters, where they're taking the kids, everything. We put all the data in a file and broadcast it to the universe. They can still kill us if they want to, but we can make it a pointless act of revenge. Keep it from actually helping them. No, Avasarala said. No? You might be forgetting whose ship you're on. I'm sorry, did I seem to give a fuck that this is your ship? If I did, really, I was just being polite, Avasarala said, giving him a withering glare. You aren't going to fuck up the whole solar system just because you're a one-trick pony. We have bigger fish to fry. Holden counted to 10 in his head and said, Your idea is... Send it to these 2 UN admirals, she said, then tapped something on her terminal. His buzzed with the received file. Souther and Leniki. Mostly Souther. I don't like Leniki, and he hasn't been in the loop on this, but he's a decent backup. You want my last act before being killed by a UN admiral to be sending all of the vital information I have to a UN admiral. Avasarala leaned back into her chair and rubbed her temples with her fingertips. Holden waited. I'm tired, she said after a few minutes, and I missed my husband. It's like an ache in my arms that I can't hold him right now. Do you know what that's like? I know exactly what that ache feels like. So I want you to understand that I'm sitting here right now coming to terms with the idea that I won't see him again. Or my grandchildren. Or my daughter. My doctor said I probably had a good 30 years left in me. Time to watch my grandkids grow up. Maybe even see a great-grandchild or two. But instead, I'm going to be killed by a limp-dick, whiny son-of-a-bitch like Admiral Nguyen. Holden could feel the massive weight of those 6 destroyers bearing down on them, murder in their hearts. It felt like having a pistol pushed into his ribs from behind. He wanted to shake the old woman and to tell her to hurry up. She smiled at him. My last act in this universe isn't going to be fucking up everything I did right up to now. Holden made a conscious effort to ignore his frustration. He got up and opened the refrigerator. Hey, there's leftover pudding. Want some? I've read your psych profile. I know all about your everyone-should-know-everything naive bullshit. But how much of the last war was your fault, with your goddamn endless pirate broadcasts? Well? None of it, Holden said. Desperate psychotic people do desperate psychotic things when they're exposed. I refuse to grant them immunity from exposure out of fear of their reaction. When you do, the desperate psychos wind up in charge. She laughed. It was a surprisingly warm sound. Anyone who understands what's going on is at least desperate and probably psychotic to boot. Dissociative at the least. Let me explain it this way, Avasarala said. You tell everyone, and yeah, you'll get a reaction. And maybe weeks or months or years from now it will all get sorted out. But you tell the right people, and we can sort it out right now. Amos and Prax walked into the galley together. Amos had his big thermos in his hand and headed straight toward the coffee pot. Prax followed him and picked up a mug. Avasarala's eyes narrowed, and she said, Maybe even save that little girl. May? Prax said immediately, putting the mug down and turning around. Oh, that was low, Holden thought, even for a politician. Yes, May, Avasarala replied. That's what this is about, right, Jim? Not some personal crusade, but trying to save a little girl from very bad people. Explain how... Holden started, but Avasarala kept talking right over the top of him. The UN isn't one person. It isn't even one corporation. It's 1,000 little petty factions fighting against each other. Their side's got the floor, but that's temporary. That's always temporary. I know people who can move against Nguyen and his group. They can cut off his support, strip him of ships, even recall and court-martial him given enough time. But they can't do any of that if we're in a shooting war with Mars. And if you toss everything you know into the wind, Mars won't have time to wait and figure out the subtleties. They'll have no choice but to preemptively strike against Nguyen's fleet, Io, what's left of Ganymede, everything. Io, Prax said. But May... So, you want me to give all the info to your little political cabal back on Earth when the entire reason for this problem is that there are little political cabals back on Earth? Yes, Avasarala said. And I'm the only hope she's got. You have to trust me. I don't. Not even a little bit. I think you're part of the problem. I think you see all of this as political maneuvering and power games. I think you want to win. So no, I don't trust you at all. Hey, Cap, Amos said, slowly screwing the top onto his thermos. Ain't you forgetting something? What, Amos? What am I forgetting? Don't we vote on shit like this now? Don't pout, Naomi said. She was stretched out on a crash couch next to the main operations panel on the ops deck. Holden was seated across the room from her at the comm panel. He'd just sent out Avasarala's data file to her two UN admirals. His fingers itched with a desire to dump it into a general broadcast. But they'd debated the issue for the crew, and she'd won the vote. The whole voting thing had seemed like such a good idea when he'd first brought it up. After losing his first vote, not so much. They'd all be dead in 2 days, so at least it probably wouldn't happen again. If we get killed, and Avasarala's pet admirals don't actually do anything with the data we just sent, this was all for nothing. You think they'll bury it? Naomi said. I don't know, and that's the problem. I don't know what they'll do. We met this UN politician 2 days ago, and she's already running the ship. So send it to someone else, too. Naomi said. Someone who you can trust to keep it quiet, but can get the word out if the UN guys turn out to be working for the wrong team. That's not a bad idea. Fred, maybe? No, Holden laughed. Fred would see it as political capital. He'd use it to bargain with. It needs to be someone that has nothing to gain or lose by using it. I'll have to think about it. Naomi got up, then came over to straddle his legs and sit on his lap, facing him. And we're all about to die. That's not making any of this any easier. Not all of us, he thought. Naomi, gather the crew up. The Marine and Avasarala, too. The galley, I guess. I have some last business to announce. I'll meet you guys there in 10 minutes. She kissed him lightly on the nose. Okay, we'll be there. When she disappeared from sight down the crew ladder, Holden opened up the chief of the watch's locker. Inside were a set of very out-of-date codebooks, a manual of Martian naval law, and a sidearm and 2 magazines of ballistic gel rounds. He took out the gun, loaded it, and strapped the belt and holster around his waist. Next, he went back to the comm station and put Avasarala's data package into a tight-beam transmission that would bounce from Ceres to Mars to Luna to Earth using public routers all the way. It would be unlikely to send up any red flags. He hit the video record button and said, Hi, Mom. Take a look at this. Show it to the family. I have no idea how you'll know when the right time to use it is, but when that time comes, do with it whatever seems best. I trust you guys, and I love you." Before he could say anything else or think better of the whole thing, he hit the transmit key and turned the panel off. He called up the ladder lift because riding it would take longer than climbing the ladder, and he needed time to think out exactly how to play the next 10 minutes. When he reached the crew deck, he still didn't have it all figured out, but he squared his shoulders and walked into the galley anyway. Amos, Alex, and Naomi were sitting on one side of the table, facing him. Prax was in his usual perch on the counter. Bobby and Avasarala sat sideways on the other side of the table so that they could see him. That put the Marine less than 2 meters away, with nothing between her and him. Depending on how this went, that might be a problem. He dropped his hand to the butt of the gun at his hip to make sure everyone saw it, then said, "We have about 2 days before the elements of the UN Navy get close enough to overwhelm our defenses with a torpedo salvo and destroy the ship." Alex nodded, but no one spoke. "But we have the Mao racing pinnace that brought Avasarala to us attached to the hull. It holds 2. We're going to stick 2 people on it and get them away. Then we're going to turn around and head straight for those UN ships to buy the pinnace time. Who knows? We may even take one with us, get ourselves a few servants in the afterlife." "Fucking A," Amos said.
"I can support that," Avasarala said. "Who are the lucky bastards? And how do we stop the UN ships from just killing it after they kill this ship?"
"Prax and Naomi," Holden said immediately before anyone else could speak. "Prax and Naomi go on the ship."
"Okay,"
Amos said, nodding.
"Why?"
Naomi and Avasarala said at the same moment.
"Prax because he's the face of this whole thing. He's the guy who figured it all out. And because when someone finally rescues his little girl, it'd be nice if her daddy was there," Holden said.
Then, tapping the butt of the gun with his fingers, "And Naomi, because I fucking said so. Questions?"
"Nope," Alex said. "Works for me."
Holden was watching the Marine closely. If someone tried to take the gun from him, it would be her. And she worked for Avasarala. If the old lady decided she wanted to be on the Razorback when it left, the Marine would be the one who tried to make that happen. But to his surprise, she didn't move except to raise her hand.
"Sergeant?"
"2 of those 6 Martian ships that are tailing the UN boys are new Raptor-class fast cruisers. They can probably catch the Razorback if they really want to."
"Would they?"
Holden asked. "It was my impression that they were there to keep an eye on the UN ships and nothing else."
"Well, probably not, but..."
She drifted off mid-sentence with a distant look in her eyes.
"So that's the plan," Holden said. "Prax, Naomi, get whatever supplies you need packed up and get on the Razorback. Everyone else, I'd appreciate it if you waited here while they did that."
"Hold on a minute," Naomi protested, her voice angry. Before Holden could respond, Bobby spoke again.
"Hey, you know, I just had an idea."